Yeah, so I want to speak about possibility of measuring his gauge.
Yes, I want to talk about the possibility of measuring this gauge fluctuation using neutron scattering. Now, as you know, this gauge field has been a central emerging quantity in these theories of spin liquids. And I think, you know, there are two emerging things. One is the spinons, and the other is gauge field. I think we have good evidence from the last talk that we may be seeing spinons. But gauge field is still very, very elusive, right? And so I think to close the story, it would be very nice to be able to measure the gauge fluctuation. So, you know, the internal gauge field is a kind of abstract concept, but physically it's really related to this the thing which is called scalar spin chirality. It is S1 dot S2 cross S3. So it's the angles obtained by three spins on three different sites, right? The solid angle. And it's a fluctuation of this quantity that we would like to measure. Okay? So in principle, we would like to know the spectrum of this object. So it is a correlator of this thing with itself. So it's a six-spin object, right? It's a challenge to measure this, okay? And, well, so there's a history to this. Maleyev actually in 1995 says that neutron scattering can measure what is called a vector chirality, which is, but that's only a part of this, is S1 cross S2, okay? And Shastri and Schramm, who's here, in 1990 pointed out that you can do Raman scattering in a Hubbard model, and that can pick out this thing. Right? It's a very remarkable paper. However, Raman scattering is of course limited only to a small Q, and so you cannot really get anything like a dispersion out of this measurement. And last year, Wing-Ho Koh, who is here as a postdoc, we proposed a extension of their idea to resonant X-ray, inelastic X-ray scattering, that is possible to obtain this. Unfortunately, the resolution that people can do today with RICS is about 25 millivolts, which is of the order of the exchange. So they tell me it's very hard to improve this in the near future. So looks like any theory based on this gauge fluctuation is quite safe. So that was the case until I came here and I learned about this papers on spin ice by Safari and Balance, and also last week we heard a talk during a meeting by Shannon, which showed that neutron scattering indeed can couple directly to gauge fluctuation in the special case of the spin ice problem. And now the main difference in the spin ice is that spin orbit coupling is a dominant interaction. So that got me to think, ask the question, well, can something similar work if I just put back some weak spin orbit coupling? Okay. And so the answer, I hope to convince you, is yes. And in particular, it works for the Kagome lattice. Okay, and maybe only for the Kagome lattice. So the Kagome lattice is this thing, and we know that there's this Jaroszynski-Borea term, which is origins from spin orbit scattering. And Jaroszynski-Borea takes the form, oh, I didn't write it down. It's BIJSI cross SJ. Right? So it's determined by this B vector. But of course, this D vector depends on the direction. So you have to specify a direction when you write down a Jaroszynski-Borea term. So the conventional direction is that you draw these arrows along the bond, okay? And so if you travel from here to here, then there's a D vector D31 is pointing into the board, and if you go 41, it's pointing out of the board, okay? So the time being, let me concentrate on the Z component of the D vector and ignore the in-plane component. They are much smaller anyway, and they can be gauged away to linear order. So this is the pattern of the Jaroszynski-Borea interaction that we know about. So now if you consider a chirality operator, let me consider something centered around site 1. So 1 is connected, the special thing about the Kagome is that each site is connected to two and only two triangles. right? So I can consider, if I consider slowly varying chirality fluctuation, so let me say that there's a small chirality here and some chirality here, and it's almost uniform, then I can consider the sum of them. And so this thing would be, I want to look at this sum of the average of these two chirality. Okay. Now, each one is connected, this one is connected to 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, but there is a Jarosinski Moria vector here. So that means that S2 cross S3 is not zero, right? Because it's linearly coupled to the vector. And similarly, S4 cross S5 is not zero, okay? So the only remaining question is whether these two add or subtract each other. Now, in this convention, they are opposite, okay, in sign. However, to define my chirality, I have to travel in the clockwise or counterclockwise direction in both cases. In this convention, they travel in opposite direction, right? So I have two minus signs, which is good, right? So that means that the fluctuation chirality, the S2 cross S3, if I come here, then I can factorize this, imagine, and they would add instead of subtract. Right? So now I can use my DM term to help me to try to couple to this thing. So physically, then it was physically clear that if these guys were not randomly fluctuating, that there's an average of 2 and 3, then if I just jiggle the S1Z component, then that would it makes a piece of this chirality. Right? So by looking at the SZSZ correlator, that should give some information about the total chirality. Right? So that's a simple idea. Right? And of course, SZSZ is something that you measure in your neutron scanning. Okay, so I have a more formal argument, which also exposes some weakness to this argument, so this picture. So the formal argument is the following. So this is what we see in neutron scattering. That's the initial and final state, right, with some SZ. Okay, let me define the state alpha. It's a state which carries chirality, right? It's something that I want to couple to, that is fluctuating. However, of course, usually there's no matrix element to neutron scattering, right? And so this will be zero. So this neutron scattering does not couple to chirality. However, if I have a DM term, then I can work to lowest order in the DM Hamiltonian, and then both the initial and final state would have it makes a piece that looks like this, right? Then this matrix element would then have a mixture that looks like this. Okay. And now you can argue that first of all, this intermediate state has to be a spin triplet because I can rotate the spin quantization axis to be in the x direction, and so this has to be a triplet. And now here's a big assumption. If I can get rid of this energy denominator and replace it by a constant, then I can complete this thing, and then this thing would just become my total chirality. Right? In other words, this is my way of building, starting from a cross product and a dot product to get the whole thing. Right? So I need to argue that I can that this is not important. Right? And that would clearly be the case if there's a triplet gap. If there's a large triplet gap, then I can just take this out, right? And if I'm interested in chirality fluctuation, which is singlet and low energy frequency, which is lower than the triplet, then I can safely these two both I can take out, and then I will end up with this. Okay, so that's a formal argument that this thing that the spins. So now this guy contains. So now what we have shown is that in the presence of the M term, then this guy actually does contain information on the that this thing does couple to the chiral, to the state that has chirality fluctuation. Okay. So then what we can expect is that if you do neutron scattering, usually you would see some, let's say, spin wave or whatever. But by this mechanism, you would expect to couple. There's an extra piece that will show up, which couples to this chirality fluctuation, which is a singlet fluctuation. Okay. And the weight will be reduced by the square of this quantity. Thank you. Yeah, the weight will be reduced by the square of this quantity. Okay. So that's pretty much the story.
Wait, why do you have a triple gap? I mean, are you in the dry spindle grid?
Well, in that case I don't, but let me just, bear with me. So, for example, if I was direct spin liquid, then the gauge propagator is this thing, right? So we expect some photon-like object, but it will be smeared out, half a photon, and so on and so forth. Okay, now of course, the assumption of a large triplet gap is not satisfied for the direct problem, the gapless. But here is a bit of wishful thinking. Perhaps it would be possible to just replace that by some average triplet energy, because you can say that the matrix element to the low energy fluctuation are small because of phase space, and that sum probably will be dominated. Hopefully it's dominated by some average thing. And then roughly speaking, this would be the case. So I think there will be coupling to this chirality, but it may be distorted. Maybe the shape, maybe it will be broad, it will make a space and some Q dependence. But hopefully you still get a glimpse of it. So that's the idea. Okay. Let me just finally say that I think this Hakami lattice is rather special. For example, it would not work for a square lattice. Right? In the square lattice, if you have this kind of a buckling, you expect Jaroszewski's DM term on these and these bonds. However, each site now is connected to 8 triangles. Right? The opposite side of which has a DM term. And you can easily see that already between these two triangles, I have a cancellation. So now we're not so lucky. These two guys can already cancel each other. So we were just very lucky for the Kagome structure that these things just happened to add. So it would be nice to try to do this experiment. And I already talked to Young Lee. He has some data, and he tells me he's always seen some piece that he never understood, so which is good. Okay, that's all.
Surely for the Dirac spin liquid, one has control of that theory, enough to you could actually compute.
Yeah, you can probably actually compute us. Me?
You? No. One can.
One can. Yeah. One can actually control the line shape. You probably get some line shape, nice line shape. Yeah. It's a good suggestion. And anyone to take up this conclusion?
Yeah. How about the triangular lattice?
Triangular, no, it's not going to work. Yeah, there's too many cancellations. I don't think I tried that. I don't think so. Yeah. Right, so triangle is even worse. So each triangle would see.
Even with distorted, anisotropy.
Yeah, each triangle sees six triangles. So you have to compute. So the chances of them adding is very small. But I haven't tried it. That also depends on the DM pattern. Uh-huh. So yeah, I think it may depend on some detail. Yeah.
So to really separate these two peaks, it would be great if you had a way to tune the DM coupling. Can you change it by pressure or anything?
By a small amount. From yesterday's talk, we saw that you can change it. But you can change the bond angle by pressure. But really, the way one may hope to see this is that, again, something very fortunate. In the Kagome, what Young Lee showed was that there are regions in the, because of the structure factor due to nearest neighbor singlet formation, there's very strong structure in the S of K in the spatial structure. So that there's certain Brillouin zones which have nothing there at all. It's very almost zero. And that's the place to look. And that's where Young Lee says that his data shows something that he doesn't understand.
Yeah. I don't know actually how did they did it, but I did one paper, and people studied the invariant code 4.7,
uh-huh,
which contains Kagome planes and then connects them. Right. They claimed that they just looked at saw some indication of chirality, scalar chirality, correlation factor. More or less roughly by roughly Bolshevika and Waldorf and taking people then.
With Raman, yeah. With Raman,
no,
you can.
No, Newton.
Peter Lemons.
Peter Lemons was kind of.
I should look at it, yeah. Yeah, okay.
Baker, a guy from Munich.
I see. I'm not aware of that.
I don't really know how they look in detail, how they do
it. Yeah, I'll be interested to check it out. Yeah.
On I just want to be sure that I understand this proposal. So, yeah. Suppose I'm measuring the SZSZ correlation,
yeah.
There will be this extra piece, that's right. The internal gauge field fluctuation.
Right.
So, in principle, if I also measure the in-plane fluctuation, such as SXSS correlation,
right.
Then there will be no such
that's extra right.
piece.
That's right.
So, in principle, I can do a polarized neutral
yeah.
scattering.
Yeah. Yes.
And fortunately, in the Kagome system, we have relatively really small,
yeah.
Easy access
right.
Isotropy.
Yeah.
So do the change
for very good. Yeah. Yeah. So actually, Young is doing that. I think this week he has some time doing some.
I think what Male suggested actually for this study called this rectal cavity.
Yeah, rectal cavity. Yeah, that's right.
There were some experiments in Gachina by Plaki and
Lovely. Question
back there. I guess so that I understand. In the Kagome with the Dirac spin liquid, you're saying that this SZ really has two contributions. One is from some kind of fermion bilinear, and the other is from the gauge field,
yeah.
from curl of gauge
yeah.
field.
Exactly.
And I guess in terms of scaling dimensions, is I guess at mean field level maybe the same, but then this psi dagger.
Oh, it's totally different. There will be totally different dynamics, I would say. Right, from the spin fluctuation itself and the and this thing will be totally different.
Yeah, but the question is if one somehow maybe scaling dimension is, depending on the scaling dimension, one could actually have the photon dominating over the fermion bilinear.
Oh, I doubt that very much. The photon is very spread out. It's, right. No, I mean the spin scattering is very spread out. Right? It's a convolution of two spinons, and that's exactly what Yang Li sees. Right. In momentum space, it's almost structureless. Okay, and this thing we hope to have a structure because it should behave almost like a photon. So in that sense, it's more singular. Yeah. So okay. In your language, yeah, this thing is more visible. Okay, but it has a small amplitude.
You discussed in Latin in Kedrin. You discussed in Latin in Kedrin. Do you expect any signatures or any possibility to see this collision in a
Latin
neutral
space? Yeah. Yeah. Well, unless you have time reversal symmetry of the type that he talks about.
Maybe it's polarized neutron, maybe
it's
some more.
Yeah. If there's really time reversal symmetry breaking, then you have elastic signal.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I guess I don't understand your response to
yeah.
Maxes. I mean, at some hand waving level, maybe I don't understand if they're yeah. in the Fermi surface frequency.
Right. But okay.
The Dirac spin liquid, I mean, the theory is that there's some fixed point, which is actually a CFT. Right. So all local operators should have, which has Lorentz symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
So all local operators should have, you know, time-dependent correlation functions and have light cones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Just a question of scaling.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So then it's a question of energy.
Sharp,
yeah. Yeah. So it's a question of energy scale.
And there's also been some momentum.
Yeah. I think you're right. I mean, I guess I was thinking experimentally. I mean, Young's
yes.
data is all dominated, and low energy is all dominated by disorder, by local moment. So he has no access to the true low energy scale. And that's why he's seeing this very broad scale of order J. Right? So I guess we shouldn't really be talking about leading operator dimension at this level.
But I guess the photon is pretty broad.
Hmm?
The photon is pretty broad there as well. Right?
No, it should be
because of this.
Should have a one over square root tail.
Yeah.
If there's a photon. Okay. All right. Yeah, thanks.